www.mediafree.tvpodcastnetwork.
Is that good or bad?
I don't know. I could be on a disaster course.
Could be.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210. Today's episode is Season 6, Episode 17, Fade In, Fade Out. And now here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Say I faded out there.
That was Sarah D. Bunting. Dave was just doing a thing where he faded out. Hi.
Oh. Hi. Nice bit, Dave.
Thanks.
Let's get into this. See how short we can make it. There's only 12 clips and we already burned one.
Short like me.
Yeah, short like Dave. Starting with our D plot, Joe's heart sucks. Joe finds Donna in the good old student union. He's using a cane because his ankle swelled up, something it does from time to time since he hurt it in high school. She's worried, but he says it's no big deal. But later it's still fucked up and he decides he should go see a doctor after all. And a doctor at the clinic at school tells Joe not to worry about the ankle, but to go easy on it for a few days. This segues into like phase zero of a physical. And after the doctor has listened to Joe inhale and exhale literally three times, he asks whether Joe has had a cold lady lately. Not lady. he doesn't have a cold lady. Or does he? The doctor says it's probably
lady.
Nothing. The doctor says it's probably nothing, but he wants Joe to go and see a cardiologist. And he recommends someone. But Joe says that Donna's dad is a cardiologist. And the doctor says he's terrific and hands him a referral slip. Is this something to be worried about? Joe would like to know. No, he should just humor this doctor. And if there's anything wrong with Joe, the doctor loses his season tickets. Har? Joe meets up with Donna, brings up her dad, and lies that he's asking because of a problem with the coach. And then Joe calls Donna later to cancel a study date because he's at her dad's office waiting to be seen. And later still, he admits to Donna where he really was and what he was doing. I skipped over the part where he's in a giant turtleneck. This turtleneck is giant, Sarah.
It's so giant. And Cameron Bancroft is not a little guy.
No.
He was like going to be a pro hockey player, I think, actually, at some point. It's not a small human. And also it's white. It just looks like a sail is trying to eat him.
It does. Like a soft ribbed sail. Yes, Dave.
Tortoise neck.
It's a okay.
Yes.
Anyway, later he admits to Donna where he really was and what he was doing, and he tries to minimize the seriousness, but reports that her dad thinks that he has a congenital heart thing. He's been advised to get a second opinion, and they both hope the next guy says her father's wrong. Donna's going to go with him to the next one. Hey, the second doctor says Joe's going to be just fine. He doesn't think he needs to worry about playing football either. Uh-oh. He calls Dr. Martin's assessment of Joe's condition an anomaly. What a relief. This is probably the last we'll hear of it. Joe and his giant ribbed turtleneck come flouncing out to give Donna the good news. He is relieved, but Donna is surprised.
Flouncing?
Well, you know. Donna's surprised and says her dad is a good doctor. And Joe basically demands that she be happy for him. But as she hugs him, oh, how she does fret. Moving on to our C plot, Matt Film Festival stuff. At the Peach Pit, Steve is promoting the Roger Corman Film Festival he's putting on for credit in his film history class, brags that Roger Corman might even come. Nat is salty about Roger Corman, saying Steve will have to forgive him if he doesn't kiss Roger Corman's ring, and there's some Roger Corman Wikipedia fact dumping. At the good old student union, Steve brags that Roger Corman sent over a movie for them to screen, and they discuss it. It's called Unholy Rollers. They discuss it in clip number two.
Nothing like a little mayhem and murder on a double date. And don't forget cheesy sex.
Is that cheesy sex or sex with cheese? Oh. Oh.
Well, how about both?
Oh.
Be right back.
All of you assholes, keep cheese's good name out your mouth.
Seriously.
Sex is too while you're up. Although honestly, Susan does have a cute moment, which you will find in the visual aid.
She does. It is cute. The movie, as I mentioned, is called Unholy Rollers. It's about a sex-crazed girl who gets involved in the raucous world of roller derby. And due to Dave's connection to roller derby and this podcast, we considered watching it this weekend, but then we didn't. We saw a little bit of it and confirmed that is definitely Joe E. Tata in it. Spoiler alert. For some reason, they all read the credits out loud and the name Nat Benson.
Hold, please.
Yes.
Tata?
Yes.
Is that how it's pronounced?
I don't know. I assumed. How are you even saying it? Tata?
Yeah. See you later. It's a tata.
No? I don't know. If you know, hit us up on Twitter or in the comments.
Yeah, please do. I'm not married to it. I just like that it's close to the word tater.
Yeah.
Also, fair. This episode is extremely boring.
Really?
Why?
Oh,
why do you ask? What?
So they're all reading the credits out loud for some reason. It's annoying. And the name Nat Benson, when they get to it, sounds familiar to Brandon. And they discuss that in clip number 3.
Yeah, I think it was Mr. America in 1972. Seldom right and wrong again, Steve. I do believe that was Nat's stage name.
Arnett?
Yeah.
No.
Fast forward.
How about you just
Thanks,
watch?
I think I will.
Idiot. Like, fast forward. You're all gathered to watch a movie. How about you watch a movie? But they do fast forward, and soon enough come to Nat, of course, really a young Joey Tat or Tata, who's got kind of a Bill Bixby circa the Hulk thing going on. I thought he was actually kind of cute. Although
no,
it was,
me too.
It's ridiculous.
I would, even though he's shorter than Dave.
He is short. They all crack up. It actually is adorable. Steve thinks this just makes the film fest even better since he can get the star of one of the movies for a panel. Brandon points out that Nat didn't mention anything about this when Steve was putting up flyers, and Susan thinks maybe he's shy. Claire thinks he might be trying to hide something, and back they go to MST3K-ing Unholy Rollers. At the Peach Pit the next day, Steve tries to sell Nat on participating in the film festival. Nat refuses Steve, so Claire takes over, suggesting it could help jumpstart his acting career. And Steve then cheerfully admits that he already teased Nat on a radio interview this morning, so Nat shouldn't make a liar out of him. And Nat calmly says he's flattered and touched, but he won't do it. He has no desire to re-enter the acting world. End of story. Nat walks away. Steve tells Claire he's going to wear him down. Later still, Steve tries to get to the bottom of why Nat won't do the film festival. And he finally says it's nothing to do with Roger Corman, who was a great guy. Steve guesses it's about a woman, and it was, but not one that was in the movie. And beyond that, he doesn't want to talk about it. He does tell Steve to give Roger Corman his best. And at the film festival, Steve introduces Roger Corman to present Unholy Rollers. And the movie is underway when some woman comes out to ask where Nat Benson is. She heard about him on the radio and hasn't seen him since he was making Unholy Rollers. Steve asks how she knows him, and she says they were engaged. Her name is Joan Diamond. Somehow never occurred to someone who was engaged to Nat that he might still have something to do with the diner that's been in his family for a million years. But anyway, Steve brings her next door. Unfortunately for Steve, Nat is happy to see her. They catch up. Part of him always hoped they'd hook over the counter and see her walk in the door. And now here she is. Unfortunately, she's divorced. Yawn. Claire and Steve want to details on how things went with Nat and Joan. He doesn't want to give details, but he kisses Steve in gratitude and says that the film festival changed his life. Oh, my God. So boring. I can't even believe I said that many words about it.
Yeah. This is not the last that we will be bored by this extensively.
Oh, good.
Just keep in mind.
Yes.
Joan says that she is a grandmother now.
Oh, yeah, she does.
So just stash that in the back of your mind when the tater tots are threatened. Spoiler.
All right, so on to our B plot. Brandon is still a bad boyfriend. Brandon is in Susan's office at the Condor when the phone rings, and we see that it's Kasten, but Brandon evidently doesn't recognize his voice and offers to take a message. A very lame fight ensues in clip number 4.
Who's this?
Brandon Walsh?
Walsh, it's Kasten. Isn't this auspicious?
I don't know, Jonathan, is it?
No, so it isn't. Susan, it's not what it means.
Care of her?
Susan could take care of herself.
Oh, that's for sure.
Listen, do me a favor. Tell Susan I'm going to be in L.A. a week from Friday, and I would really like to see her.
You bet. I'll be sure to pass that along.
Yeah, I bet you will. I'll see you soon.
Uh-huh. Have a nice day.
Hey, what'd I miss?
Nothing.
Oh,
bad liar is bad.
So bad.
And short.
And embarrassing. Like, just give her them anyway. God, this is so stupid. Brandon seeks Val's expertise in her capacity as a known devious schemer, and she is there for it, which I kind of love. He tells her about the casting call and the message that he didn't relay, and Val's advice is to write the message on a slip tomorrow, leave it in the mess on Susan's desk, and assume that she will find it eventually, and then he'll have plausible deniability. I resent the suggestion that Susan would have a messy desk, but okay. And the next morning, Susan is already at her desk and on the phone. Brandon turns around at her 1 second finger, so he doesn't know, as we do, that she is talking to Kasten, who's in Atlanta to have lunch with Elton John. Kasten knows what's up in clip number 5.
So, did you get my message?
No, what message?
Well, that figures.
What figures?
Ask Walsh. I called yesterday. He didn't tell you?
No, he didn't.
All right, well, I'm going to be in a week from Friday, so tell Walsh you're busy next weekend, okay?
I am busy. With him.
Yeah, we'll see about that.
Will we?
Yeah. Susan orders Brandon in to yell at him about this, and he repeats Val's lie and produces the note neatly tucked under some papers, and Susan is embarrassed and apologizes. He is so fucking terrible. She says she's sorry. I made a gif of this, and he looks at her so smugly, like, yeah, you are sorry. Like, no, fucker, you did this. You're wrong.
Even if you are in the right, that she shouldn't be like constantly on the fucking phone with Kasten, who's always calling from these like fancy assignments that no 23-year-old would ever get.
Who's based in Seattle, PPS. Like, no.
Yeah,
like,
no.
Moved to New York. Anyway, go on.
Just, I don't know. Like, instead of trying to hang on to her so that you can be right, why don't you just let her go with Kasten?
Yeah. I don't know.
This whole situation is obnoxious. I hate all of them. Fuck off.
Yeah, he tells her that no apology is necessary, which is true. And having gotten out of his phone message lie, Brandon tries to make plans with Susan for the next weekend as a way of sussing out whether she's going to have plans with Kasten. A, he lives in Seattle. B, anyway, no, she doesn't. C, that means he totally got away with that whole message thing. Unacceptable. I'm so mad about it. Give people their messages. This was the time before you could text people or leave them voicemail. This is malpractice. Horrible. We still have an A plot to get to, but first, we have a message from Gordon Lightfoot.
Hellos.
Aww.
It me's Gordon Lightfoot's faithful Duke here on Again What This Is, Beverly Hills K90210s. Today I have been asked by nice human Jenna to make announcement on behalf of her Duke Turbo. Better known as 2B2 Friends and Humans, this good Duke ran for presidents in 1908, except 2008. Duke not good with dates, on very important platforms. Cheese and bacons for all. Bacons. Jenna recently has to say goodbye to Tubies after a long happy life. When do get to be 14 years old, it mean he have very good peoples. In honors of Tubie, Jenna have established the HA Turbo Fire Foundation, an advancement of a very important issue to make cheese and bacons official snack for all dudes who humans listen to Again With This Beverly Hills K90210 editions. As resident Duke in Podcast Hawaii offices, I strongly supports. Enjoy official snack, Dukes. And to the late Tubies, we thank you for your services.
Thank you, Jenna. Aww. And Tubie. Moving on to our A-plot, Kelly has man problems. Kelly's at the Peach Pit telling Jackie that her dad, Bill, is coming to town. And since Kelly is being a baby voice, it falls to Jackie to be a bitch about it in clip number 6.
What are you going to do about it?
I don't know. He wants me to meet him at the airport.
Probably so he'll have someone to talk to during his layover.
That's not it. He's coming here to stay.
For how long?
He says he's moving here.
And you believe him?
Why shouldn't I?
Let me see. I could give you 21 years of reasons.
Why are you always this way when it comes to him?
Because he has done nothing but disappoint you since the day you were born.
That is not true.
Honey! You have always worn rose-colored glasses when it comes to your father. I just don't want you to be hurt again.
Mom, he came to my graduation. I didn't even ask him.
Well, when you have such low expectations, I guess any crumb is a meal.
He has taken good care of me. Let's face it, you haven't exactly been the model mother or wife.
Ooh. Well, if you mean by taking good care of you that you've always had plenty of money, fine. Just don't come crying to me when he breaks your heart again.
Oh boy, which of them will be right? I wonder.
As long as it's not Kelly, I don't care.
Ooh, so poor Kelly is way too nervous and excited to be meeting her dad's private plane. This is, by the way, where we see that Jason Priestley directed the episode, so he gave himself the direction to look that smug and asshole-ish when Susan found the message he hid. Cough.
Shocker.
I know. What kind of woman is Kelly with her father? Exactly the kind you think. Clip 7.
Daddy!
Kelly!
Marv!
Kelly!
Hello!
Hi. Oh, you look great.
No, you look great. That's my favorite girl, huh?
Happy your dad's back?
Who tells their dad they look great?
I don't know. And also, Jenny Garth totally acts like someone who's never interacted with a father before, which, I mean, I guess, okay, like that's supposed to be Kelly, but like they pull apart from this hug and she runs both her palms down his torso. I made a GIF. It's very weird and intimate and not correct.
And then they're holding each other's forearms.
Yeah.
It's this weird like game show greeting trust fall thing. It's just weird.
It's all very strange. Also, not at all the same guy who came to her high school graduation
in
that season. They discuss her psych major, LOL, and all the nutcases in her family that she could study. Did he really mean it when he said he was moving to LA? She asks. He did, he says. Claire then runs into Kelly in the bathroom at school. Kelly pulls out the vial of Coke from her purse, which she says she has because it's evidence, but which she apparently still hasn't talked to Colin about days later. Okay. Claire advises that she should stop walking around with it in her purse, maybe, and then changes the subject to her dad's imminent arrival, and Kelly says she's not sure what to expect. Colin teaches, boringly. We see that Val is in his class, and as it breaks up, he and his very spiky, dumb hair assure Val that he's back to clean living. Back to Kelly, where her weird relationship with her dad is happening in her car in clip number 8.
Hey, honey, you're a good driver.
Thank you.
What?
I remember trying to teach your mother how to drive a stick shift. Biggest mistake I ever made. We fought the whole time.
You guys fought all the time?
No, actually, we didn't. Only 23 hours a day.
It must have been hard on you living with her while she was doing drugs.
Your mother wasn't using anything I didn't use. In those days, we all got drunk or high or whatever was around. Whenever we could. It's sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
Oh, Dad.
Are we stupid?
Yep.
When did you stop?
When I left your mother, I had no choice. She wasn't around to pick up the pieces for me anymore.
Well, the day you left, she went on a 15-year bender.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry you had to live through that.
Me too. I always thought that you would come back and rescue me, but you never did.
There was a reason for that, Kel.
What?
I always thought that if I came and took you away from your mother, that that would have been the end of it.
You're probably right.
I knew your mother was on drugs when she was your sole custodial parent, but I just figured she would be better for you than me.
Or like taking you away from her would destroy her because she's not already doing that. And also, this is new that like Jackie was nonstop on drugs until the fashion show.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. I don't know.
Whatever. Shut up, both of you.
Yeah. So Bill comments that he would like to see Jackie while he's in town. Just Kelly thinks that she would agree to have dinner with him. Kelly thinks she might. And meanwhile, in David's room, he and Val discuss Colin's class and Colin's drug use. Val says that Kelly can look after herself, but David notes that she's made some bad choices in the boy department. Has she not dated all of 3 guys in the time that David has actually known her, which would be Dylan, Brandon, and Colin?
Well, and also rapey cowboy and the guy who didn't even use a blanket.
Well, yeah, but she didn't. Well, okay. I guess.
Date. Well, yeah.
But sure. He wasn't really in the picture then. Like he, I mean, I guess it's possible he's heard tell, but whatever. That seems very judgy of him under the circumstances. Anyway. Yeah.
Although, I mean, even if he's only talking about Brandon, a fucking man.
True. And Dylan. I mean, okay, fine. He is right. They all suck. Val asks about Kelly's dad, but of course he doesn't know anything. And then she shows him her drawing and it sucks, which is kind of funny. Kelly gets home with her dad. Donna comes out from the back in these weirdly baggy jeans that totally give her penis lap, which you can see in the visual aids. Greetings are exchanged. Drinks are offered. Donna tells Kelly that Colin's been calling a lot and Kelly tries to escape without discussing it further, but Bill won't drop it. And it gets all very meta about their own relationship in clip number 9.
He broke a promise too many times.
But you're in love with him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
That's always the problem, honey. Being in love with someone who hurts you.
Well, actually, he's hurting himself. He loves this cocaine more than he loves me.
Who doesn't? That,
but it's a very seductive mistress. I can attest to that.
I just don't want to deal with it, you know?
You know, honey, I always think that people deserve a second chance. Of course, a guy like me has to think like that because I'm always asking for one.
Well, I am ready to give you a second chance. And a third chance, and a fourth chance, and a fifth chance. I'm glad you're here, Dad.
Yeah, me too.
Ew.
Also.
And then they fuck? What is that?
Honestly, God.
Like, hey, Jason Priestley, maybe direct Sean Donnelly to not be, like, audibly getting a boner at his daughter.
Totally. Oh, my God, audibly. David finds Kelly and her cropped baby tee with a gray skirt suit. What even? He warns her mildly about getting too attached to her dad, but she laughs him off and says they're going house hunting today. And sure enough, we see Kelly and Bill leaving a house with the Walsh's old real estate agent, Candace. She's got the lease. Bill takes it. Kelly's happy. Sometime later, Bill bugs Kelly about Colin again, and she admits that they are in his neighborhood. In his studio, Colin is working and aggressively chewing gum, which you can see in the visual aids. I made a GIF. And before long, sticks a little knife in a vial and does a bump. Seconds before Kelly enters with Bill, Kelly is cold. Duh. It seems like Bill can tell that Colin might be high, and when he walks up to the painting and Colin grabs Kelly by the lapels and thanks for coming. She can tell, too. The holidays are over and so are we, she declares. And she orders Bill to leave, but he's still friendly and complimentary about Colin's work. And after they're gone, Colin chews his gum even harder, throws something at the canvas, and dumps out his whole vial on the table. Oh, Colin. And then all the tailors are sitting down for a very civil dinner. Jackie serenely declines wine, but welcomes Bill to order some. It turns out that this house he's taking is in their old neighborhood where Kelly grew up. She doesn't remember anything about her childhood. Jackie admits that she'd warned Kelly about Bill, but she seems like she no longer thinks that he requires it. And Kelly proposes a toast to her parents, and they clink with water, which is very bad luck. I know you noted that, too, in the visual aid, Sarah.
Yes, I did.
I'm not superstitious, but even I know that one. But at least no one says chin chin. And at the Peach Pit after dark, Colin comes to talk to Val. He wants back the Coke that she took from New Year's because he's finishing a painting and he needs a boost. Val, clip 10.
We'll drink some coffee like the rest of us.
Exactly.
She tells him she doesn't have it anymore, and he wants her to say she threw it away, but she tells him the truth, which is that Kelly has it. He gets furious that Kelly didn't tell him. Off he stomps. The next day, Kelly tells Donna she's never seen her parents get along that well. She thinks it's more than Bill's charm. It's that he grew up. Val calls Colin and wakes him from a dead sleep to tell him he's supposed to be teaching a class. They argue about whether he's taking a personal day because he was up all night painting or if he just got high again. It is the latter, which we then have confirmed as we watch him stare at the empty canvas like a big liar. And then Kelly's at the house with Candace, both waiting for Bill to come and sign the lease. He's almost an hour late, so Candace has to leave, but they can reschedule, and she promises she won't give the house to anyone else. And in her car, Kelly tries to call Bill at his hotel, but clip 11. Excuse me?
He checked out? When? I see. No message.
That squeal goes on for so long.
I know. So much for being a good driver.
Yeah. Kelly drives straight to the private airstrip, which, by the way, we can clearly tell is a car rental agency. And she just abandons her car in the front. Like, that's not how parking works. Especially at a private airstrip. Like, I think even if it's private, there still are probably security rules. But whatever. She's too late. Bill's plane is already gone. And Kelly cries. And when she gets home, there's a floral arrangement by the door with an apology letter from Bill, who's in Milan for a deal. She should buy herself a present with the check that he left, and he will call her in a couple weeks. Kelly goes to her bedroom and looks at herself in her very sad vanity mirror and feels sorry for herself. And the soundtrack is very concerned. Dave, can you start it? Clip 12. So Kelly yanks open the door, and there's that vial. She picks it up and considers it for like 10 minutes, and instead of doing what she should, which is fix her feathered lip line, she opens the vial and taps some out and rolls up the check that came with Bill's letter. And snorts!
No.
And then she puts on a hockey mask and rampages through their entire apartment complex, apparently.
Yeah.
Thanks, Dan.
We get it!
Is she still snorting?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I kind of rushed it. She was staring at herself for much longer than I thought. Oh, no.
P.S. We don't actually see Jenny Garth snorting because I suspect she tried to do it and couldn't.
Yes. And that's it for Fade In, Fade Out. Let's wrap it up with our MVP. Jackie. Bill. Oh, who?
Bill.
Bill.
Stomped on Kelly's heart. A plus. Would watch again.
I was going to say Jackie, even though she does back down on her judgment of Bill, which I think was ultimately correct, because she is a bitch to Kelly's face, which does not happen enough.
True.
Least valuable player. I mean, Kelly's pretty annoying, but Colin did sleep through class. So I'm going to say Colin.
Yeah, Colin.
All right. Very good. And now to our Twitter suggestions. This one comes from the user at TurnockJT. 5 ways the writers could have Chrissy Snowed Dylan into the episode. That's awesome. Sarah, do you want to start?
Oh, gosh.
Dylan could
Kelly
have called.
Could have talked on the phone with him about her abandonment issues, because I know that was something that they actually did talk about when they were going out.
That's exactly what I was going to say. He could have Brandon could have called him for advice when he thinks his lady is stepping out on him with someone taller and with also taller hair.
Kasten could have called him for advice about getting a woman away from Brandon.
Steve could have said at the film festival that Dylan bought a print of some very, very rare Roger Corman movie and provided it to give the film festival a little extra zazz.
And Dylan could have been the subject of a painting somewhere in Colin's loft.
Well, there we go. That makes 5.
Sure does. Next time again with this, Joe's heart is busted. Steve and Claire get busted for traffic ticket stuff. Valerie busts Kelly for doing white stuff. And all the busted looks from this and every other episode of Again With This are available in our visual aids, which you can find at previously.tv. You can follow us on Twitter at previously.tv, excuse me, at previously.tv. And you can follow this podcast at AWT90210. I'm blonde thing Sarah D. Bunting. I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. I'm here with my co-host, Great Textile Deal, Tara Ariano. She's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. Mm-hmm. And our producer is multi-use personal check, David T. Cole. He's on Twitter at Glark. Talk to you next time.
No, it's not for you.
Dun, 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 dun. Everybody sing along while I find...
Hi, you know what to do after the beeparoni.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.